For April 26, 2013, we talk about the recent Nintendo announcements, XCOM Enemy Unknown, and we ask you what games you keep coming back to. Welcome to the 20th level. My name's Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Moneysmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We're getting more action on the Facebook page, all of these things.
Yay.
Downloads are doing a thing. It's all real good. Are you making train noises?
I was bound chicken chicken.
Oh, okay. Actually,
we're getting more action.
I was,
yes.
Yay.
Yeah.
See, it's kind of weird. Dennis and I have been doing a lot of co-op with people who listen to the show.
Yeah.
So at this point, to a certain degree, I feel like the show is almost morphed into just this very roundabout way of talking to my Facebook friends.
Well, no, that's part of what we like to foster. We like this to be, you know, that is the wonderful thing about podcasts is that you can be directly engaged with people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we do have the Steam group. Just, you know, do a search for The Level podcast on Steam. It'll be there. You can see me not playing games, all that stuff. Yeah.
Ooh.
Ooh. Fantastic. That might be a preview. I'm not sure. I don't know. So do we want to pull the ripcord on this baby? Light this
jump right in.
Wait, let's lift up the kimono.
I don't even know. The brief, where we talk about things that happen in this world of ours, not tragedies or anything like we almost did last week. Who knows? I don't. Do you? I don't.
I know what we're talking about this week.
what happened in the world? Because I was actually having trouble.
This one resonates with my childhood, so I was kind of excited. Ratchet and Clank is getting a movie.
Yeah, I'm looking at that one right now. Actually, I figured you would take that. It's being made by the people who did Reboot.
Reboot?
Well, I've never seen Reboot.
No.
It was a television show that took place inside the world of a computer, but it wasn't Tron. It wasn't like some, you know, Jeff Bridges got digitized. But no, it was like, you know, everybody had like the villain's name was Megabyte and the evil lady was Hexadecimal. Yeah.
It's basically a TV show that made more and more sense the farther I got into my college career.
Yeah, it was real cute. I liked it a lot.
Also, apparently Bill Clinton was a fan.
Oh, really? Huh.
I don't know quite what that says, because he's a man for, you know, generally pretty cool guy, but generally awful taste.
But yeah, that's Rainmaker Entertainment are the people who are making this. So what do we know aside from 2015?
It's got the key voice talent from the games, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's good. If it's going to be computer animated, which I don't know how they would do a live action one.
Oh, God. Birthing 1,000 furries.
Oh, God.
Oh.
Yeah. But like, what do we know about it?
So like I said, all the original voice talent from the game, which is great because I think voice actors in the video game industry often get screwed, so... Good to see that they're staying loyal to them. It sounds like they're going to bring in the villain from the first game.
Okay.
Chairman Drek, which is good. I spent a significant amount of my childhood playing these games and really enjoy them. That's probably the original villain was the one I liked the best.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. They're using, at least heavily basing, the sets and the characters off of the stuff that's already been established. On the models and everything that have already been established from the games,
uh-huh.
Which makes a lot of sense. Like the game has a very clear aesthetic. So there's not a lot to be said for, you know, upscaling it or making it look better. It looks how it looks and you right. can't make it look more like it looks,
but it's not going to be machinima. It's going to be,
no.
Okay.
but they're able to very easily transition those character models. into film, mm-hmm. which is cool. And it's coming out in 2015. It's going to kind of focus on. Well, they haven't released a lot about the story. There's going to be something though. I'm looking for right now. There's going to be something Ratchet and Clank get involved with. It's like the heroes, the Galactic Rangers. And therein lies my first worry about the film, that the Galactic Rangers are going to be some sort of, you know, quirky ensemble kids Boy Scout troop type thing or something like that to get an appeal for those kiddos.
Well, I mean, what do you think the audience is for this film?
Kiddos.
All right.
Yes. See, that's hard. I wonder what the demographic that most plays Ratchet and Clank is.
Yeah, and I really like. I want this to be a Shrek. Like, if this could be a Shrek, that would just make me overjoyed. And it, you know, if you read the interviews, they say that's kind of what they're shooting for. In fact, I think they say something like appeal to all ages or whatever. I don't know how well they'll execute it. Obviously, it's way too early to make any judgments. However, I have compiled a list of phrases from the interview that give me worry.
Okay.
This is corporate jargon from the reveal interview that give me pause. Marketing teams.
Oh, yeah. Trying to establish a franchise or a brand.
Strong consumer appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Immediate market awareness.
Immediate. Let's see here. Secondary revenue opportunities.
Marketing efforts. Pipeline.
Oh God, the pipeline that gets. so like if people who don't, I don't want to reveal too much about what either of us does or anything like that, but it's maybe a little bit known what I do, but that is like, we are very much Hit attuned.
Man. Yeah. Corporate jargon is the two that gave me the most pause: high quality results at a much lower cost and shorten the typical development/pre-production phase.
Ooh, that is rough. Yeah, this sounds like they're what's a puppy mill but for dreams?
The internet,
I suppose. Kickstarter? Yeah, Kickstarter.
So like, I love this franchise, and I think it probably would translate better than most games that I've played into a movie. And you know, they've said we guarantee that the crazy weapons and stuff are going to be a part of it, but you know, I just the amount of corporate jargon that they're using to describe it it worries me.
Yeah,
it's like, also, like when, oh, go ahead.
How interesting can a weapon be in a movie? Like, I mean, it's fun in a game because you get to interact with it, but in a movie, it's watching it. You know, like,
see, it turns into chickens. Come on,
granted,
chicken.
No, but I think any time they do the whole assurance, you know, oh, fans of this are gonna like it, to me that's worrisome, because I think what most video game movies and what like comic book movies missed for a long time was that you're not trying to port the, you know, the story or whatever, you're trying to translate it.
Yeah, adaptation, yeah. Right?
Right, you have to look at, you know, don't look at what is this, look at what about this was awesome.
Well, the misstep here was that they released something to the public that was obviously meant for investors. This wasn't for fans. This isn't for fans, the things that they're saying. Like, maybe the teaser trailer was, but all of that, yeah.
Although if you watch the teaser trailer, there was one line in there that made me laugh really, really hard.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Ratchet and Clank humor does seem to be intact. It was a little slapstick, a little juvenile for my tastes overall.
So the Ratchet and Clank humor is intact.
Yeah.
Which, yeah.
It's a good thing. I mean, like, just that's always been a spiel. You know, but even back when I was playing them, like, I'm back on PS2. Like, mm-hmm. it felt like what a Looney Tunes game should have been, right?
Yeah. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
And what's the superhero fellow?
Quark.
Quark.
He's front and center.
And he is fairly awesome, so.
He's actually the one who has the line that made me laugh. If you guys can watch it and tell me which was the line that made me laugh, I'll do something. I don't even know what.
Is this like that thing on I forget even where it was. Oh, it was Bonfireside Chat.
Yes.
where we asked people to guess what I was going to reference that I stopped
myself.
Yeah,
I can do that. guess what line from the Ratchet and Clank movie teaser made me laugh the hardest, and I'll give you some on Steam.
Yeah, do it on Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you want me to move on to my story?
Yes, please.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So this is kind of like a weird thing because we recorded a weird time of the week. Like, you know, we record on Tuesday and we release on Friday. And last week we recorded even at a weirder time. Not to get too deep baseball here, but we missed the Nintendo Now event. So there was some interesting stuff that was put out there. They kind of brought what appears to be some of their big guns. Such as announcing that there's going to be a new Yoshi's Island game. There's going to be a new Mario Golf game, a new Mario Party, a new Mario and Luigi game, Mario and Luigi Dream Team coming to the 3DS. A bunch of 3DS stuff. Not much for the Wii U. The biggest thing that I saw coming out for the Wii U was they're bringing Earthbound to the Wii U Virtual Console. Which, if you're looking to draw hardcore people to that and give it some kind of appeal, that is a good way to do it.
Yeah. Isn't that another one of those games that, like, was never going to be remade?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm wondering how they worked out the licensing stuff. Like, I can only imagine that they went back in and took out those songs and those, you know, kind of things.
That or the Blues Brothers are like, we're getting residuals from what?
Yeah. what is this thing? I don't even know. But
it is Nintendo. Maybe they just sent like ninjas.
Nintendo
has ninjas, right?
I think so. Maybe they're bringing the Legend of Zelda Oracle of Ages and the Oracle of Seasons to the 3DS eShop. They're like that virtual console there. But the biggest one, the one that I'm like really excited about, and the one that looks most promising, is the Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past sequel that is coming to the 3DS this holiday.
Ooh, interesting.
Huh. Yeah. So top down, you know, very much like the previous, very much like that game. It's a sequel too. Yeah. No, it looks real neat. I have a very high opinion of Link to the Past, as I believe a lot of people do, rightfully so. I'm going to issue forth the controversial opinion that it is a good game.
the titles kind of run together. Which one was that?
That was the one for SNES, where you wake up in your uncle's cabin and you go to the
castle.
Okay,
I was about to say where his father dies.
And he gives you the sword. The one with the dark world and the rabbits. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good one. There are very few bad Zelda games, but that is what many would consider to be the good one. It doesn't have the cel shaded Zelda Wind Waker kind of look. It's got kind of its own thing. It looks very much like a 3D-ified version of the Link design on that. It's more of a top down kind of thing. It looks real good. That is literally all I'm going to continue to say, because otherwise I will rant or rave or be like, oh.
So is this going to be an immediate purchase for you then?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, who knows? I'm kind of bummed. They're calling it a Link to the Past 2, which is, you know.
Oh. What would you rather it called?
Another Link to the Past. Another Link to the Past. Yeah.
Wait. Did you really just say a Links to the Past?
I was just going to say Links to the Past.
Yeah, Links to the Past.
Ah, okay.
Which I would accept. Link to the Future.
Ooh. Mm. Ooh.
I feel like I touched a nerve there.
We're like, two. This time it's personal.
Yeah,
a link to the present through the past.
Yes,
now
through
I'm
a time
confused.
Ribbon. Yeah. So it's I'm excited. I'm excited about all of that. I don't know, but it could be. It's been a while since I've liked a modern Zelda game, so. Who
did
knows?
You play Twilight Princess?
I lost interest, which I would qualify as not liking it. It's not actively disliking it. It's just that maybe I didn't give it enough of a chance. I don't know. I know that you love it. I'm not gonna slag on something you have professed to like.
You can slag on it.
No, I don't even know why I'm saying slag. Why is that my verb?
Have you been playing
I wasn't going to call you on it, but now that you've brought it up, yeah.
I think it's British slang. I think that it's like, you say slag off, you strumpet.
Oi.
Slag off, you strumpet.
My contribution to this conversation, oi.
Oi. So yeah, I feel like it was good. I mean, they're really, really putting their weight behind the 3DS, which may or may not be the right move. They're probably saving, their big stuff on the Wii U for E3. I forget. Do they attend E3? I don't even know.
They do.
Oh my god, they do. Okay.
Typically, why bother?
Yeah.
Why bother?
No, but that's where more mainstream media will be paying attention. Nintendo Now, I believe, is what that's called. God, I hope that's what it's called. Nintendo Now generally is for enthusiast press, and that makes sense given that they announced a couple of Zelda games in Earthbound and Mario and Luigi, none of which have kind of the broad appeal of something that they would. Or the broader appeal is something that would bring out on the Wii U to try and, you know, move some units, try and push some plastic, fellas. Got to get out there. Got to always be closing you.
Got to push their Wiis on someone.
Yeah.
Wow.
Jeez. I don't know.
See, I feel like the thing that would worry me about the Wii U. I was looking today at, you know, all the games that were released this week, you know, looking for reviews, and, you know, like 12 games on the PS3, 12 games on, you know, Xbox, you know, like 10 Steam games, and then there were like 2 Nintendo games.
Yeah, but like it's a weird time for them. Usually their big pushes are in the late spring, early summer, so like June is really active for them. They generally don't put stuff out, you know, around this time of year. Also, they're nowhere near as bad as the PS Vita. I'm feeling really vindicated that I didn't buy a PS Vita.
Yeah. Price drop that never happened.
Yeah. I looked at it today because something was on their virtual console or whatever. I was like, we'll see. It's probably dropped to like $150. So, but no, it's still up there. Like the base model on Amazon is still $300.
I'm holding out hope that it's going to be E3, but at the same time, you know, it's already too late. So,
and they haven't even announced like the redesign of it. I don't know if they're going to do a redesign of it. I wouldn't want to buy the first.
They're going to have to do some sort of incredible redesign that's available from the day of E3.
Oh yeah,
like another one of those. It's under your seats.
Yeah. You get a system that has no games.
Yeah. Have Oprah announce it.
Yeah, exactly. Use all the budget that you would have used to develop games for it on getting Oprah to appear. Yeah. But then you have to pay taxes on it, and it like really is upsetting, and it's going to have a media blowback. It'll be
taxes on Oprah.
No, that was the thing when she gave out all those Pontiac
cars.
She gave out all those Pontiac G6s, people were like, oh my god, this is going to change my life, I need a blah blah blah, but you had to pay tax on the value of that. And a Pontiac G6, you know, XYZ, that's paying a couple of G's out of pocket for an ostensibly free car. That is something else.
Well, and that's like a near 50% tax, right?
I don't know. Like the tax on my car, I don't know. I people will be able to triangulate what I paid for my car. It's not nearly 50%, I don't think. Like
I thought like high value gifts were considered the same as like winning the lottery, which my understanding is like some very, very high tax rate.
Yeah, I never saw that. I think at worst it would be treated as income. Oh god, this is a video game podcast.
Stop it!
The podcast about Oprah.
Let's talk about our taxes, guys. How did you guys file this year?
Yeah, do you have an actuary and an engineer?
So anyway, that was which one was? So. That's Nintendo Now. I'm excited about some of the stuff that I saw. I really want to play Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons again. I like those games a lot.
Save it for the multiplayer.
Oh, yeah. That's a there we go. So who else has a story?
I do.
Go for it.
Hooray.
But it involves a word that I can't pronounce, so we'll try and get this done. So amblyopia. Do you guys know what amblyopia is?
No.
Oh yeah, I go there all the time.
Wait, it's a sweet new club that I've gone. No, it's like lazy eye syndrome, I guess is the.
Oh, you stole mine.
Oh.
Oh, is this people who can't use the Oculus Rift?
No.
Oh.
No. I think I know what this is.
It's just a story that they posted this last week about curing people who have lazy eye.
With Tetris.
Yeah. Yeah. Was this your story as well, David?
Yeah, that was the story I was actually going to go with.
Tag team it. Who did the research?
Yeah, David.
No idea.
McGill University.
I don't read these articles that I regurgitate.
I know what I... All right, yeah.
I know what McGill I don't University? Know.
No. I know the thing that I focus on is how they did it is typically how what happens with treatment for lazy eye is they'll cover up the dominant eye. So that the weak eye just has to process the information and try and get stronger.
Right.
But apparently it's not too effective. And so the way they tried to do it with Tetris is they put on two different cameras over either eye, and one would follow the pieces down and the other one would focus on the bottom. And so it encouraged the eyes to work together and coordinate, and it showed a better success rate.
It sounds like it's getting them to work independently. So you would have somebody who has like weird laser eyes that could shoot two people at once.
Oh my God.
See, what I want to know though is can you still wear the eye patch? Because then you look like a badass.
I'm not sure. Like, can you get like the guys who do the Walking Dead makeup to put a sweet scar on your face underneath it?
While you're playing Tetris?
I spend 3 hours in makeup every morning just to go to work, but damn it, it's worth it.
Yep.
I got to look like a badass when I play Tetris.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yes. No, you've got to intimidate the game so it gives you more of those line blocks.
Tetris seems like the weirdest game to do that for because I don't know of any other game, maybe Minecraft, but like I will find myself thinking like, what is this pain in the front of my head? When I'm playing Tetris, and it's kind of like, oh, it's because I haven't blunked. I haven't blunked, nor have I like changed my gaze, nor have I like looked around. I'm not following the individual pieces with my eyes. I am like looking at the gestalt of what's happening.
Because you're watching. I'm not watching the blocks. I'm seeing the gaze.
Yeah, you see the redhead, right? Yeah.
Wait, what?
It's a week of Matrix references.
I suppose, yeah.
Although she's a blonde.
Oh, yeah.
In a red dress.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. Yeah. We prefer the redhead. But,
we know what you meant.
Yeah. But but just kind of like because I've only ever really put in time with Tetris on handheld systems, I've never had to like go back and forth and follow. It's all been right there in my gaze, right?
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So that seems odd to me, but... I haven't seen their rig.
On the plus side, it seems like the Oculus Whatchamadingle would be perfect for this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The
old Whatchamadingle.
I was it Oculus Rift or something?
Yes. Yeah.
What is that?
That doesn't even make sense for a name.
It's a badass virtual boy.
Yeah, yeah. It's a 3D. It's a 3D helmet. Yeah,
it's basically what the 80s promised us we would have like 20 years ago.
So the dream of the 90s is alive on my RSS reader, apparently. Every single article like Skyrim on Oculus Rift. Look here, this is Team Fortress with the Oculus Rift and you're running on an omnidirectional treadmill.
Yes. Good luck with that.
I did see a video this last week of somebody doing that with Skyrim.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd want to do it, but it looked kind of cool.
It looked neat. Like
the directional treadmill would be awesome if they added force feedback. Then I would watch someone play.
Yeah, just like have a bunch of automated like the jousting poles from American Gladiators. Just like every time you take a hit, just comes in and just fucking wangs you in the torso. You know, if that was
an American Gladiator too.
Yeah, get Turbo in there. Yeah, just give him some crystal and he'll keep going all night. But
oh my god!
But you know, if they had that at COSI, if they had an Oculus Rift, an omnidirectional treadmill, and a tweaked out Turbo at COSI, I would go there.
Do you remember the time we tried to convince Caleb that it was called American Gladiator because it was America's most popular sport?
Caleb being, okay, so inside joke, somebody that we all roomed with in the dorms, who was from Hong Kong, and he was very naive about American culture in a lot of ways.
See, it wasn't so much he was naive so much as he had certain stereotypes, most of which were accurate about Americans being violent and hating the environment.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you could come up with something that satisfied those, he was much more likely to believe you.
Yeah. That was unkind to say naive. It's just one of those things unacquainted with.
That perfect intersection of naive and gullible.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel comfortable with that characterization. Man, Tetris is like, there's a lot of purpose to that. Like, I always break this out, but people use Tetris, or some studies have been done that show that Tetris, and specifically the Tetris effect, are really effective at helping people with, PTSD.
Yeah.
Huh.
Really?
Yep.
Why the Tetris effect? I mean, isn't that just you become really good at, like, packing your car?
Yeah, no, like PTSD,
you visualize
like,
it.
Yeah, PTSD is like you know, you're kind of like reliving the events over and over, and
you're
focused. It's an obsession, just with this event happening, and anything that resembles it, you know, brings that back up. However, if you short circuit that visual, pattern finding thing, this is incredibly misinformed. So don't just go like look on Google Scholar or something to find this paper. but like in a pop science kind of way, it definitely makes sense. Which is you replace one kind of recurring pattern of obsession with another, and it kind of like, you know, knocks it out and replaces it.
I'd like to do a comparison with Dr. Mario and see which one's better.
Yeah, Dr. Mario feels like a lot more stressful.
I love Dr. Mario.
Yeah, Dr. Mario is real good. It's not kind to colorblind people, though. That's the only problem.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah. So those are the two stories. Do we want to grind it up?
The grind.
Time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing, the Vidya games, as it were. As you do, I don't even know. I'm out of energy tonight, folks. I am so sorry. This is
no,
tragically
no. Vidya games is good. Let's go with Vidya games.
Yes, well, that's Hank Hill. I'm just saying things like Hank Hill says them now.
Wow.
When Cole is really tired, he becomes Hank Hill.
Sorry, I think I just spit take.
you spit blunk. So spit blunking aside, does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
I can go.
Go, do it.
Because I only got a short little ditty. I've been playing Spec Ops: The Line, which I think I talked about last week. Maybe I don't know if I had started it last week.
You introed it. You hadn't quite dove into it. You haven't quite dunked into it.
I hadn't spit blunked into it yet. So. But I spit blunked it all this last week.
Spit blunked it so right.
Yeah, and it is now beaten.
Okay.
So I beat it, but I believe we're doing a spoiler cast of it in the near future, so I will refrain from talking about the finer points of it.
Yes. We can combine this, right? We can tag team on Generals.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So my weekend was hijacked here this past, so I wasn't able to make as much progress in it as I would have preferred to. But I was playing it, I'm like in the second or third chapter or something like that.
Okay.
I haven't found Super Joe yet. I like it a lot. I don't understand what people are saying about it being a bad shooter.
Yeah, I was fine with the shooting mechanics.
I feel like it was perfectly serviceable. I mean, I was in the really easy early part, but I mean, I was using a couple of different types of weapons, kind of the general stuff. I don't know. It felt fine to me. I like the scenario design so far. The fiction is real cool. The environment's super creepy. I feel like it's good. Dennis, it sounded like you're about to equivocate.
I might have said this before, but as long as you don't use anything with a scope, the shooting is perfectly fine.
Oh yeah. Are there times where it calls for you to use a scope? I mean, spoilers free, obviously.
No, I mean, it's not a spoiler to say that there's a sniping sequence, and you know, every shooter has a sniping sequence.
It's a modern shooter.
Yeah. So there's one sniping sequence that I can think of, and yeah. You get through it, but you never have to use a scoped weapon if you don't want to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, I didn't have a problem with the scope. I just think you just need to know how to operate the zoom properly.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, dude. Yeah.
You're doing it wrong, man.
I'm just saying, if you use the full zoom, like you can toggle when you have a scope weapon, like a sniper rifle, you can toggle between two different zooms. I think it's like 12 times and 6 times. And if you try just looking with the 12 times and finding people, yeah, that's not going to happen. But if you zoom out to like 6 times and then zoom in when you see them, you can do it that way.
Yeah.
But at least I found it to work.
Grant, I haven't gotten it yet. I'm hoping it goes on sale soon, but at least a lot of the reviews I read kind of led me to suggest basically what when people were saying the shooting wasn't good, that was code word for I really like Call of Duty.
That could be, yeah. I had no complaints with the shooting mechanics of it. I thought it was fine. And even to go against that, one mechanic I thought that was really nice is if you like headshot a person, it slows down time briefly, which kind of serves two purposes. One, to be like, yeah, I just headshotted somebody, if you're into that.
If that's your kind of thing.
But it also kind of rewards you saying, okay, since you got a skill shot, you have a little bit of time to yourself that you can plan the next person to shoot at.
Yeah, so you can pick like, your next target.
Exactly. So it gives you a little bit of a breather. So I thought it had a nice like dual purpose. I thought it was the mechanics of it were fine. That's very true.
Also serves the purpose of saying, look at what you just did.
Yeah. Draws attention to it.
Yeah, depending upon your perspective. Yeah.
But that's for the spoiler cast.
I like the banter. It's generic, you know, like we're troops and we're doing a thing, kind of banter. But
you're not very familiar in your third chapter.
What's this? I'm sorry. You both talked over each other.
Go ahead, Ben.
I was just making a joke with the banter. I said there's a lot of whistling as they walk around.
Yeah.
I was going to say just – you said you're still fairly early in the game. The banter gets better as the game goes on.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also like the use of music, like hearing Deep Purple's Hush on the stereo.
Yeah.
As you're like fighting your way through a crashed airliner. Pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You know, I like that song a lot, so that was a good pick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know, it's real good. I just really, really hijacked this from you, Ben.
But I'm just so glad upset you guys with like people.
Yeah. I'm coming at it from somebody who's early in the game, so I can comment on generals without spoiling them. So that's why I feel better. Like so it was your opinion of it good, like positive, Ben? Do you like it?
We'll talk about it on the spoiler cast.
Okay.
I don't think I could properly describe it with a single adjective.
Right. So. Okay.
When is the spoiler cast, by the way?
TBD. My life is in shambles, so it's hard for me to plan. TBD.
which just means for those listening, you have time to go get this game and play it and be able to contribute, which if you haven't, yes. You should.
Yeah.
While Cole picks up the pieces of his life.
Yeah, I'm just imagining you with like, the premature, like, you know, hobo facial hair.
Check.
Yeah, and then I realized, oh wait, it's happening. It's really happening.
It's happening. The crushing. Yes. So Yeah, I apologize for being mercurial about that. We said something in April, but I'm not quite sure that's going to happen. I would like to pick an arbitrary date, like about 2 weeks out, and just say, fucking, let's just do this. But
and it's still at the point in our planning that we've got options. Nothing's locked down yet. So good. This is a call. Go play that game. Yeah. And I can't wait to hear what everyone thinks of it without needing to worry about spoilers.
Yeah.
What's the play time on that? Yeah. About
8 to 12 hours, maybe.
Oh, that's not would you too say that, horrible.
Yeah, that's about
accurate.
I think
a game you would recommend, though? You know, some games I find they're better if you play like a little bit, you know, every day or something like that. Is that something you'd say?
It's up to you. I don't think it would make too big of a difference. But,
okay.
Yeah. It's says the person who did Walking Dead in one weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. I took hour breaks, all right? I'll take a break. I need to do something else. And I was like, I think I'm going to install that next chapter.
I would recommend yourself giving – I think I beat it in three-hour sessions, something like that. But just having breaks in between to think about the game. Really,
yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
I think that's something – and we've talked about that before. That's something I believe is unique to the medium, that really you get more out of it when you do have breaks in between, you know, finishing it.
Right.
Cool.
Did you play anything else, Ben?
Nope.
Okay.
There's a coworker at work who also plays a surprising volume of video games. So I've been talking with him about video games as like a side talk. I'm sorry that I've been not fidel.
But let's not air this here. We'll talk about it off mic.
The one thing I wanted to say is I was talking about suggestions for the next video game that I was going to play, and I think I might pick up that one, you know, good video game that none of us played that has a weird name that's hard to remember. Dishonored.
Oh, yeah. I've got that.
By good video game, you mean crap. Sorry.
Oh, wow. Okay. Strong opinions. But it's $20, which might be an argument for David's point, but...
Yes. So my only other thing has been ridiculous fishing, but that's more of a like I played it in the elevator at work kind of thing. Still really good. I'm digging their philosophy on, you know, content, which is we'll put everything in the game, you know, and not hide that from you. Yeah. So who else wants to talk about a thing?
I can go.
Yep.
Despite swearing it off, I went back and beat. Dead Island.
Oh. Are you preparing for the Riptide edition?
See, initially that's kind of what went, you know, was the genesis of that. But I'll actually get to that in a sec. I've got to say, overall, it depends. I'm not sure, you know, if I can like a game less once its sequel comes out. Because kind of my overall feeling at the end of it was sort of that, you know, it had a lot of really, really big flaws in that the combat is just boring.
Right.
It takes forever to the point where, like, it's very quickly, if you're going to play the game, don't do any side quests and avoid all combat you can.
Okay.
Just because it's not worth it.
Right. Isn't that kind of a survival horror trope, though?
See, but the problem is it's not a survival horror game. It's an action game.
Right.
Like, it wasn't that you can't do the combat. Like, you quickly become very adept at taking the enemies out. It's just that, you know, taking out a group of enemies would take, you know, a minute or two. And then you walk 10 feet, and there's another group of enemies.
Yeah, it's Assassin's Creed 1 and 2.
Right. And so considering how far you walk in the game, that quickly becomes the game just really drags.
Right. So how does the sequel diminish your opinion of the existing thing?
Well, and I guess what is kind of my feeling was I looked at, you know, they had a lot of really good elements in it, but mm-hmm. they also had some really bad elements, and I sort of felt like, you know, okay, maybe, you know, this first game in the series, I think it's a relatively inexperienced developer, you know, maybe, you know, kind of, you know, we've discussed in the past, often the second game in a series is much better than the first.
Right.
But then apparently Riptide's come out and every review has basically been, it's exactly the same as the first game.
Oh, yeah. So there are two things that I could see being at play here. So first off, that statue is the worst fucking thing.
What statue?
It was a pre-order bonus or something. It is a woman's torso, but with her arms and head removed. It's like a bust, which is kind of like, check out the sexy lady with boobs, and it's got like
like the Roman statue. It broke off at some point. This was like, yeah, no, like, this is supposed to be
just
gory.
Like gnawed off. So like, here is this Bundy-esque like statue, this trophy of previous conquest. Just kind of like, it's gross. Secondly, like, joke aside, you know, I like to think that there's, you know, compartmentalization and a bad sequel, you know, doesn't necessarily make the original thing worse. I don't like Wayne's World less because Wayne's World 2 was a massive disappointment, especially because it had Christopher Walken in it, and you would have expected that to be a better thing. Or oh no, Christopher Walken. Okay, Rob Lowe was in the first Wayne's World.
Yes,
has to be your bowl. Okay, no. So it's So I don't like Wayne's World 1 less because Wayne's World 2 kind of blew.
See, how dare you take Wayne Stock's best? I can't even make a joke.
Okay.
But I liked Wayne's World 2.
Yeah. And they're like, Wayne's World 2 has its moments, but I could see, like, maybe having watched Wayne's World 2 or played Dead Island Riptide, I'm going to go with Wayne's World. And if you saw the holes in that, and if you went back and watched the first one and you brought that same baggage back to the first one, then it would you know, diminish your enjoyment of it. Like it would feel worse because you knew it was a problem.
I guess I would compare it more to what I'm saying is, you know, I would compare it more to like what M. Night Shyamalan movies, where it's like, you know, the first you know say like The Sixth Sense. Granted, that wasn't, I don't think that's the first one he made, but you know. Yeah, you know, I watch it, and it's like, okay, you know, this is a neat movie. It's got, you know, got some good ideas. There's some rough parts. The whole like random plot twist thing's kind of weird, stuff like that.
The thing the movie's built around,
right? But you know, you see like, okay, it's kind of quirky, but yeah, it works. But then when he makes like five more movies that are the exact same thing, you can look back at the first one and realize, oh, that wasn't someone doing some things right and some things wrong. That was someone just, that's what they happened to do, and they did some things right by mistake. I guess that's kind of what I'm saying. You know, normally I would look at and be like, all right, they didn't, you know, they didn't get everything right, but, you know, they were trying, you know, I don't know.
The fact that they did the same thing again proved that the problems of the first one were a product of laziness.
Right. I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
Although I have to say overall, the big thing that kills the game is just, they can't tell a story.
Okay.
To the point where like, if you play the game, when you get done with it, first off, are we past, are we past the spoiler?
If you care, skip forward a minute or two.
For which game? Oh, for Undead Island?
For Dead Island.
Yeah. I
mean, I
don't care.
It pissed me off. It doesn't have either a satisfying or happy ending, which it's not a survival horror game. And at that point, I went back and checked. I had played the game for 45 hours, had traveled 203 miles and had mostly on foot and had killed 2,803 zombies.
Okay.
After that point, I want a freaking satisfying ending.
Satisfying in which regard?
Basically, all of the characters that were at all likable die. All of the characters you can actually play are psychopathic assholes. Most of the likable characters die simply because once their role in the game is done, they're never mentioned again.
Okay.
And then the... So, I mean, that was just... There's not a happy ending. But then also, I feel like, you know, you could have, like, the final boss fight. You could do it in a way where it's like, okay, all this crap that pissed me off, you know, that I don't really like, happened. But then here's this awesome boss fight where I get to, you know, get my revenge, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't really happen. It's just kind of lame.
Right.
I was going to say, some of the problems that you're describing, I feel like also existed in Far Cry 3 and Tomb Raider as well, just kind of lazy design like that.
Well, and in terms of laziness, probably the other thing, though, that's the fact that I don't like this story. But the other thing is they just, the storyline, you get done with it and it doesn't make sense. So actually, for example, one of the characters that is quite possibly one of the most important characters of the plot is not even mentioned until the at all until the closing like voiceover dialogue.
Huh. a great way to end a game too.
So like basically what happened is I went to the wiki and read like, oh, by the way, that if you know, buy the DLC and play the game from the bad guy's perspective, we bothered to tell you that actually this good guy that's been helping you the whole time is actually the bad guy who's behind everything, and that's what we're talking about in the last cutscene. And, oh, by the way, if you read the novelization, we bothered to tell you that this person we made you rescue several times is important to the story because she's the original one that had the zombie virus. And so that's where, like, the antidote could come from or something.
The whole,
but it's like all these things that, like, would actually make the story kind of interesting if you had bothered to tell me.
The whole, you know, watch the Gaiden anime or the you know, straight to DVD CGI movie or read the novel to get this to get this detail. There's a moment in Mass Effect 3 where there's a fairly major character who's kind of an antagonist who's like mentioned and is kind of like, you. It's like, who's you? Who is this guy? I don't understand. It's kind of like, again, you go on the wiki and it's like, oh, it's from this earth. It's from this other thing. So there's a way to do that that benefits the overall fiction. Right.
Right.
Like, look, I haven't read the Mass Effect books just to keep my examples consistent. However, at least the first two Mass Effect novels like really dive deep on Captain Anderson and kind of his role in the Alliance Navy, you know?
Right.
And, you know, he's an interesting character in the game and it was a good choice for them to flesh him out like that. That is a good way to do it. The bad way to do it is what you're saying. Not so much the stories in the DLC. Well, that's, anything with DLC is a little bit of a hairy discussion. Where's this? I don't know. It seems like if you take something that should be apparent in the primary thing and then offload it to this other thing, you're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. Am I using that idiom right?
Maybe it becomes merchandising and thus inherently inhibits my enjoyment.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. I don't know, and I feel like the other thing is, you know, if there had been storyline in the game other than that, it might have been tolerable.
Well, like of what I played, you know, it was like the story events were mostly like, oh gosh, we had a group go out looking for boats, but they got trapped. Go get them. Like it didn't seem like something that was conducive to narrative. So it's a little bit weird to hear this being issued as a complaint.
See, I guess my issue though is the fact that, you know, I love you go to my Netflix account and it's all action movies. I liked both Expendables movies. I liked the second and third Matrix movie. I'm not saying, like, I'm not someone that at all cares about good storyline. The problem was that there was no storyline.
Does that imply that you don't like the first Matrix?
Oh, no, I also like the first one, but that's not noteworthy. I mean, that one actually had plot.
Right.
Okay.
So,
but, you know, it's just the fact that, like, you know, there is no storyline. So, for example, when I say, like, you know, none of the compelling character or likable characters survive, what I mean is, like, all those people that they send you out to rescue, you're basically theoretically sending, you know, spending the game, you know, trying to get help, stuff like that, and then you get to the game and just decide to leave.
Yeah.
Or like the fact that there's one point at the game where they're like, you have to hack a computer, and they're like, oh, why are you doing this? Watch your back. You never know what's out there. And then you go and hack the computer, and nothing happens.
Right, right.
Well, you know, it's just you need some story. You don't need a good story, but you do need some story.
But here's the question. I don't know why I'm not really being that much of an apologist for the game. I'm mostly seeking to define the term. So one of my favorite kind of, you know, thoughts on video game story, it was Justin McElroy on the Joystick podcast way back, kind of saying like all of video, like, you know, one of the main purposes that video game story serves is, do I know what I need to do next, and do I know why I need to care about doing that? Like, is this the thing that is helping that is helping to usher me from point A to point B? And so, like, that gets into this weird kind of thing where, are you talking about narrative? Are you talking about the things that are kind of like hung up around this stylistic choice? The characters, like, you know, the characters aren't really driving you to do this next thing. So it becomes like either, you know, Dead Space, where it's like the story is you're going around trying to keep the ship afloat, you know, mm-hmm. by doing this stuff. That's the story of Dead Space, with the marker stuff being the narrative, right? Being the trappings around it. Like in this, I'm just wondering like where that falls apart. It's just kind of like, oh, there's sure. some bullshit that I have to do next, or is it like this thing that is a B movie zombie game doesn't have that, like, isn't meeting my expectation.
See, I would say it's a combination of, one, they just don't provide enough plot for it to matter, and they don't, you know, there's nothing I care about. I don't care about why this stuff happens or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then also, though, you can make a game, like Left 4 Dead has very little real plot, but a lot of atmosphere, you know, a lot of storytelling, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's completely, you know, completely missing.
Yeah.
So like, you know, there's a lot of scenarios where they'll, you know, put you in really interesting, you know, scenarios where, like, you know, one of them, you're, you know, going through the old resort hotel, and you're going through like the kitchens and the meat lockers, and there's, you know, all this, you know, it's cold, so there's all this, you know, steam and sides of beef, and then nothing creepy happens.
Right.
You know, it's like they could have had no storyline, but then scripted in some cool stuff that made it seem like this real tense zombie game.
Right. So it's missed opportunities.
Yeah, I guess. And yeah. Like I said, I also just I resent the fact that the storyline and the characters were unlikable.
How much of this is a function of the game being designed for multiplayer? Just kind of like
See, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, maybe that's it, is, you know, it's just a game that's, you know, it's more horde mode than anything else.
Right.
Although I would say part of that is, if you were going to do that, then don't put in, for example, the requirement to search for collectibles, because you can't possibly return to an area after you beat it.
Right.
But...
Huh.
And it's also, like I said, it also annoys me, you know, the whole, we got on this before, I think I mentioned this when I first stopped playing it, but the whole rape, you know, thing kind of annoyed me, but...
As it does.
Well, yeah.
I'm kind of out of the loop here.
Can you elucidate that?
One of, again, the few likable characters in the series at one point decides to go try to help a group of gangsters, gets captured, and when you finally rescue her, it's highly implied that she's been raped. I believe the novel straight up says that's what happened.
Mm.
Does it feel like an insensitive depiction?
Huh?
Does it feel like an insensitive depiction?
Not so much that, so much as just that, I guess it's kind of, it's unpleasant. You know, I don't like, you know, having that. So therefore, I resent them putting it in the game unless they do something with it.
Right, right.
You know, if they had that in... And then had it be a legitimate, you know, story element that they used to build the character, you know, actually did something with it,
right?
Then that'd be fine.
Yeah. So
you
it's
think
just,
that they're just using it for like a knee jerk emotional appeal?
See, I don't think even that.
Just
like
gratuitous.
It didn't feel at all offensive. It's just, you know, it was a bad thing that happened, and they didn't either. A, play it up and try to do like a dark, gritty, like society's falling apart thing, or, you know, they just didn't do anything with it.
Yeah, it sounds like just textbook gratuitous.
Yeah.
To me. Yeah.
And like, yeah, I don't know. That whole...
Was there anything that you liked about the game?
that made you want to be...
See, and that's... What I would say, honestly, it's the game's greatest strength with its greatest weakness. You know, what made the game so great is that it was a zombie game where zombies were actually dangerous, as opposed to, like, you know, like Left 4 Dead, where you can just blow through, you know, hordes of zombies with your automatic weapons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The inherent problem with that is. That
you can't get anywhere.
Means if you're killing a lot of zombies, that it gets tedious.
Right. Huh. Yeah.
So perhaps they could have done better pacing.
Yeah, the game just needed to be shorter. I mean, like I said, I spent 45 hours on the game.
Good lord. That is way too long for a thing.
And walked 203 miles.
Well,
now imagine if you were
walked virtual miles.
Now imagine if you're playing that at Kosai with the Oculus Rift and the omnidirectional treadmill in turbo, tweaked out on what I can only assume is MDMA now. Turbo's dropping DMT into his eyeballs and he's talking about space coyotes. Like, I don't know. He's in a real hard way. You better run as fast as you can.
Wow. On the treadmill.
Yeah. So that's Dead Island.
Sure. One other thing, I've just played it like 15 minutes, but have you seen La Mulana?
Oh yeah, that's a shooter.
It's as far as I can see, it's basically if someone crossed Spelunky and Dark Souls.
Oh yeah, okay. So yeah, I've heard the comparison to both of those things. You know, it's one of those things where you read the name of it so much that you kind of think you know about it, but I've never actually like looked at it. So this was put out on Steam, I believe. What was it?
Yeah, it just came out on Steam. Apparently, it was kind of very similar to the Cave Story thing, where it was initially like a one man, I think one man, a small team indie game. that was like a free on the PC a heck of a long time ago.
Right.
And then they've now kind of remade it with, you know, higher production values and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what happened to Cave Story and also Spelunky.
Yeah. So far, I don't know, seems pretty good. It's got some interesting sense of humor so far. Just, you know, the one thing that's weird is the jumping in it. It's, you know, if you're moving and jumping, and it you know, affects you just the way you'd expect. But if you are just staying still and jump, you can't hook the jump until you're at the top of the jump.
Oh, it's Castlevania rules to a certain extent.
See, I guess, I wasn't, you know, it's not the way Castlevania is, like, on the Game Boy Advance, but my understanding is maybe that's the way Castlevania, like, worked back in the day.
Yeah, 1, 2, and 3, it had different jump physics. It wasn't like Mario where you could just move left and right however you want.
Right. And my understanding, you know, from what I read, is that this game is, in addition to just being apparently a really good game, it's kind of a love story to, like, that era of gaming.
Right. I'm down with that. Yeah, I need to actually, like, do some more research on it because, again, like I said, you see and hear a bunch of stuff about it, but you don't actually know it. I always pictured it as, like, a shooter, like a top-down Ikaruga or an R-type kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
The beginner's guide video / trailer is worth seeing just to hear, like, the horrifying, like, high-pitched, computerized, like, Japanese jabbering explaining how to play the game. So.
Neat. Yeah, so I'm gonna check that out as soon as I get an opportunity.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, it's apparently a game that's just known for incredibly hard puzzles, so it should be right up your alley.
Oh yeah, I'm down. That is a thing that I'm about in most regards.
Hey Cole.
Yeah.
What's it all about?
What?
Nothing.
Like, what's best in life?
No.
Did I miss something? Did I?
No.
This is going to bother me.
We try
me.
To ask the big questions here.
Yeah,
tonight.
I guess.
That's going to be our next multiplayer.
What's it all about? What's all this, Ned? So, how about you, Dennis?
I've been playing two games to talk about today. I, first off, finished Dear Esther.
Oh, yeah. You started that a little while ago.
Yeah, and another one of those games that I've taken nice long breaks between each of the chapters. And it only occurred to me when I got to the final chapter that from the beginning, the game gives you the option to start any one of the chapters right from the start.
Right.
So I kind of am curious now, if I played it through in backwards order, would there be
Does
like
it
some...
Does it sync up with The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah. it's just interesting how codified my interaction with video games is, that I'm given four options and I choose the one on the left and
to
the right. I don't think they're even numbered, actually. They've just all got different titles. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, yeah, obviously they do go in a clear order once you play them left to right.
Ascension and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But man, is that game beautiful.
Yeah, it's so good. I think I'm due to go back through it.
Hey, save it for the multiplayer.
What's that?
Said, hey, save it for the multiplayer.
I suppose. I guess. Damn it! Why do I keep doing that?
Because it's a thing we all do. Yeah, it's. I think it's definitely something. And I know that the dialogue is somewhat randomized. What you actually see.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I want like the dialogue in certain scenes and whether or not you find the set piece. It's put together in a really, really interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've been in kind of an introspective mood recently. Like over the past weekend, I watched Synecdoche, New York, which is never a good sign for me in terms of a mood thing. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I am primed and ripe for diving back into this and just feeling bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. I almost feel the need to do a spoiler cast of some regard, but.
It's one of those games where, you know, it genuinely caused me to think differently about something. And I forget who it was. It was some old college professor, said something that stuck with me, that the definition of art is that it shifts your plane of thinking.
Right. Right. Does this take something? Does it take away that you're viewing the world? And, you know, are you touched or changed by having gone through that?
Wait, so yeah. LSD is art?
Kind of. I mean, I don't know. It has to be constructed. I guess people make LSD. I don't know. I just. Yeah.
We just gave someone a horrible, horrible argument.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the Wachowskis say that they define art as being an invitation into another perspective.
Yeah. Same thing.
Oh, there you go.
Right.
So LSD is art. Damn it. Okay.
I think that cheapens it.
And why a drug dealer is art?
Yeah.
He's an art dealer.
I think that cheapens it.
Man, that's art. Okay. That's the first man. Okay, I'm done.
You were saying?
No, I was gonna say I think that cheapens it a little. Not saying like oh it changes the perspective, but like oh you know anything like that. It's a good working definition anyway.
Yeah,
it's a good working definition. Drug stuff aside.
Yeah, we're not going to define art tonight on a video games podcast.
Right, right.
I played it the final chapter right before I went to bed, and I like woke up thinking about it.
Yeah, that's a bad.
My gosh, yeah.
Yeah, it's really satisfying. There's something that I want to talk about with the ending, and it's something that both Gary and I noticed. I wonder if you notice it too. But the final action, did it bother you that the way that was played out, like interactively?
Yes,
that it
although
didn't make you.
I
do
felt
the thing.
I felt. So yeah, and you can tell me if we're getting too spoilery. I felt like I was looking through someone else's eyes the entire time.
Right.
So it didn't necessarily. I understand why someone would be mad about that, but it didn't necessarily bother me as much because I never felt like it was my decision to make.
Yeah.
Or maybe I felt like it had always been inevitable or. Yeah, I'm still processing it, and that's what I love about the game is I feel like it's something I can go back and almost meditate on. And yeah. But my big takeaway, and I think this is not necessarily spoilery, but in the midst of the deepest regret, the deepest pain, in the midst of seeming chaos, love can bloom
even on a battlefield. No, yeah.
Oh,
no,
damn it! All right, yeah. It's been done before.
Yeah. No, it's but no, it's it is a wonderful little. This is vague enough that I don't feel like I'm giving it away. It is a wonderful meditation on mourning. And grief.
Yes. Yes.
Not just for something that's dead, but for something that's lost. And, for any kind of criticism that could be lobbied against it for being barely a game, I think that it succeeds at what it attempts to do very, very well. And it's almost not fair to criticize it for not being something it's not trying to be.
Yeah, that's very fair. And that, I'd heard people say, oh, it's not even really a game because of XYZ. That never really crossed my mind while I was playing. Yeah. I felt like I was interacting with it. I was making choices and I did have an objective and I had a choice about the way to achieve that objective. Mm-hmm. It just, it's a very low risk game, I guess.
Yeah. One last kind of thing about that. How about that music, man?
Oh, so good.
Yeah, I bought the soundtrack. It's available on iTunes. Yeah, it's real good sitting and working music.
And it feels, I almost every time music started playing, I kind of like froze in place and waited just because I wanted to make sure I could soak it in. I wasn't distracted from it.
Yeah, all of it's at a tempo that feels like it's very much matching your gait.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Almost, and I can't say this specifically, but matching with the waves when you're next to the shore, yep. I'd have to go back and see if that's actually true. But that was the music felt like an extension of the sea that you're always right next to or near.
Right. Yeah. Was it orchestral or what type of music are we?
Yeah, I mean, it's orchestral, but it is very sparse and very atmospheric orchestral.
Okay,
so there's a prominent piano riff, like chord progression that goes throughout all of it. The instrumentation is orchestral, but only in the barest kind of sense.
Okay. It's very intentional, though.
Yeah.
Can I be a dick or ask a dick question?
Go ahead.
Isn't it pronounced orchestral?
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was just matching whatever somebody, whoever said it.
I'm not trying to be, you know.
No, that's fine. That's the kind of thing that curiosity. I would say. No, I approve of any and all pronunciation pedantry or pedantry.
David's like, oh, I was just saying it'd be funny.
Oi!
Yeah, so yeah, Deerester is real good. It goes on sale a lot. I highly recommend it. Thumbs up, Dennis?
Absolutely. And this is kind of inside baseball, but thank you for that as a birthday gift. I don't know that I have ever gotten to it on my own. So
yeah. Sometimes it's nice to inflict your taste on people because sometimes it tastes.
Yeah. Well, then consider this a ringing endorsement of your taste.
Yeah.
So that's I kind of finished that up, and I'm sure it. Like I said, it's a game that I woke up thinking about. It's been on my mind all day, and just it's stuck with me, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. The other game I've been playing, I think I've talked about wanting to buy this for the longest time, and I finally broke down and went and got XCOM, Enemy Unknown.
Oh, nice.
Ooh. Yeah. I thought I was going to wait for the Mac port to come out, but I was just, I knew I was going to have some extra time this last weekend and was like, damn it, I'm doing it.
Right.
And it is totally lived up to the expectations that I've built up for myself.
Yeah, having played the demo and everything. I think you made the right choice getting out on console. I think that is the proper way to go for that particular game.
Yeah, yeah. And I have not regretted that decision at all. It works. You know, it's for all of its really, really cool window dressing, it's at its heart a grid-based strategy game. Mm-hmm. There have been games that have handled that well on consoles, and there have been games that have handled that poorly on consoles. And this one handles it really, really well.
Right.
So, for anyone not familiar with it, aliens invade Earth, and you're kind of in charge of the International Department of Stop the Aliens.
Yeah.
Title.
It's weird to say this, but the game almost feels, I come from a very corporate job, and the game feels the closest to like the day to day of my corporate job of any game that I've played. Does that sound
weird? Well, it's a lot of like managing panic levels in different regions of the world,
and you have like a monthly report to your boss and everything. Like, it's. Yeah, and that makes my job sound way more badass than it actually is. But it's resource management the game. It is people management the game. It is, responsibility of the game. And it's weird to say, but like I felt – it's in the best way, not like a heavy, oh, I don't want this. But like you feel responsible for your team. You feel responsible for making the choices. That the whole gist of the game is that, you can't save everyone. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't give you the next mission. It gives you the next three missions and forces you to choose one country to save, and then the other two are just get mauled by the aliens. And all of the you have that power, you have that responsibility, and when you wield it in an effective way, it's incredibly rewarding. Mm-hmm. And that's just at the macro level before you even get into the actual. Grid-based combat game.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a tactical role-playing game.
Yes.
But your units have permadeath like they often do in the game and those kind of games.
Oh, which is, dude, you get it. They all have names, nationalities, all look unique. They get a specialization, so you get to find out what your newbies are actually good at as they develop. If they get promoted a couple levels up, their compatriots will give them a nickname.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it just serves to make them...
Just to really give you a gut punch when you let them die.
God. I've had a couple die on me. Unfortunately, they've all been fairly early on, but I'm getting to the point where the members of my squad are kind of consistently injured. So I need to have a larger roster than I actually need, because at any given time, about half of them are going to be out. And it's just like they're out for more and more days, and the injuries are getting more severe. And it's like, I know that in the next couple of missions, I'm going to start losing good people, people that I've...
We lost good men out there.
Yeah.
Sir, they were all good men.
You call in some red shirts.
Yeah, yeah. So... But man, that's an emotion that I've never had playing a video game before, is I have this sense of pride in the team that I've helped build. And so, you know, when I, you know, it's not pride in what I did directly, as in like, oh, I'm so skilled at video games. But it's, you know, when my rookie that I just brought onto the field for the first time makes, like, you know, this incredibly difficult shot to save the day, I feel like, oh, you really rose to the occasion. And there's some dialogue where, you know, you do this mission where you need to capture an alien for study. You need to bring them in alive. And the scientist, you know, first off, you have this debate with the scientist over, you know, am I really going to risk my men's life to go do that? And you successfully complete the mission. And there's just this moment where the person's like, hey, I know that can't have been easy. Would you thank your men for me?
Yeah.
Oh, you did such a good job. I love you guys.
Now,
yeah.
Is there actual like dialogue options?
Not in that specific instance. It's kind of played out through you've got your various subordinates that are the different archetypes. So you've got your completely insane and very probably evil research doctor who has no problem butchering aliens to, you know, understand their tech and how they think and stuff.
As you do.
You've got your engineer who's like kind of, you can tell he's probably a little bit, not like a hippie pacifist, but he really doesn't enjoy the fact that he's helping you engineer all these
weapons of death.
Weapons of death. I was trying
no
to
engineer would ever feel that way.
Yeah.
Completely unrealistic. We're all bloodthirsty.
And then you've got your kind of second in command, or you're, you know, he's kind of the lead officer, whatever, who's very much about the men and stuff like that. So it's this great balance of characters who kind of play out these moral dilemmas for you. But then there's, you know, there's the less stated kind of moral dilemmas of, you know, since the game has started, I've felt this proclivity towards protecting the U.S. Even when that's not necessarily in my best strategic interests, just because I'm from there.
Right.
That sort of just there's a lot of stuff that isn't directly stated in the game about the, you know, the choices you're going to have to make as a leader and the stuff you face. But it's in there, and it just really, really cool to experience that.
Right.
And the grid-based combat so far has been very satisfying. Generally, you know, it's a strategy game. It's not supposed to be about skill other than, you know, kind of mental thinking processes, I guess. And you know, generally if I kind of see my way to a strategy, I can execute it.
Let's put a note on this. Menthol processes is my funk band.
I like it. Count it.
Yeah. Continuing.
Yeah, but I mean, generally if I have a plan, I can execute it and not feel like I got caught up on a technicality of the way the system is built. You know, generally if something is a good strategic idea, it will shine through.
Yeah.
And the couple of times where I've gotten my ass handed to me, I can kind of stop and think, okay, here's where that was strategically wrong. Not here's how I didn't abuse the specific systems of the game correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've very much enjoyed it.
Neat. So you are in the process of playing it. Have you beaten it?
No, I have not beaten it. I have no idea how long the campaign is. I've kind of reached what feels like my first big story mission.
Okay.
Which is weird. Like, you know, I've probably put, you know, 8 hours into it, maybe.
Right.
And it feels like, you know, I finally identified what could be an alien base that has some significance. Because to this point, I've just like random abductions and aliens causing chaos. And that's given me enough trouble. So now, and that's actually something the game does really well. So, you know, the game to this point has just been dealing with the chaos. Mm-hmm. It finally felt like I'd gotten my feet under me and I was starting to get a squad that I felt really good about.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden I have to. They simultaneously introduce this additional objective where I need to find a way to go on the attack, and at the same time introduced a whole new enemy class that is way tougher than anything I've seen before, meaning that right. my team is significantly more injured than before. So it does a great job of the second, you know, handing you a new situation, the second you feel like you've gotten that under control, throwing you back into chaos. You wrestle control back, it throws you back into chaos. And it's this great cycle of, you know, everything just goes wrong at the perfectly wrong moment and you have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it sounds great.
Which country did you build your base in?
I built it in Europe, specifically in Germany. And I think that's because the bonus that I got at the start was the most attractive. I'm trying to remember what that was.
I remember is the U.S. gets bonus to aerospace and South America gets bonus to interrogation.
Yes. I found that.
You know.
Asia gets bonus to technology, and Europe gets – I want to say Europe gets a bonus to engineering in some way.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah. Germany, of course.
It would make sense, if it were in Germany, yeah.
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 As Germans do.
And cool. And Australia's just like, meh, I'm hanging out.
Well, all of their bullets come back to them. It's really, really unsettling.
Relaxation.
It's impractical.
No. But yeah, I mean, by this point, I bet Australia's pretty much Mad Max, right?
Yeah, actually, that was one of the first places I put up a satellite. And so they've kind of been pretty well under control this entire time.
Huh.
Oh, well.
Yeah. They do their own thing.
Cool. So any final thoughts on that before we scurry on to the next segment?
No, I mean, not beyond the fact that I'm enjoying it. I could come back next week and be like, everything I've read about the game says that it's incredibly hard. I'm playing it on the quote unquote normal difficulty and haven't had too much trouble. I've had people die on me. I've had stuff go wrong, but nothing catastrophically so.
Right.
So I feel like I'm just now getting to the first main story plot point of the game, so I don't know how much of that is just I haven't gotten into the meat of it yet. So we'll see.
Huh. Cool. Multiplayer?
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
All right, so it's time for the multiplayer, which is where we ask you a thing, and then we read that answer. This week's question was, is there a game that you regularly come back to and play, or replay, and why? Yeah, so let's jump right in there. What does Jala say? So some of these are a little long, so we can hit high points. Let's go with you, Ben.
I have to open that up.
Oh, okay.
Me being prepared.
Well, I got it.
I got it. Shining Force, Jala says. Or do we ever get confirmation on whether it's pronounced Jala or Hala?
It's Jala. It's not Hala, although I like that. I was reprimanded by her in a YouTube video where it's Jala.
Okay. Jala says Shining Force 3 because I love the story and characters. Unfortunately, this game was released as three separate titles, which could be played individually or in sequence with the same data influencing the later installments. And only one of those games ever made it to the US version of the Sega Saturn near the end of its production life here.
Right.
Dragon Force, also a Sega Saturn game, for similar reasons.
Yeah.
We got a lot here. So we'll do the cliff notes of this. The original Legend of Zelda. It's a nice choice. Mm-hmm. Lunar, the Silver Sea.
Silver Star.
Excuse me, I cannot read. Somewhat sensitive about that. Castlevania Symphony of the Night. Azure Dreams, Digimon Card Battle, Pokemon Red, Blue, Yellow, and Stadium, because they're all ridiculously addictive. Which,
oh, man, I had forgotten about Pokemon Stadium.
Yeah.
Man, that was the jam back in the day.
Yeah.
And lastly, any Elder Scrolls title, because they sap away life of anyone who plays them. I can agree with that.
Yeah.
Also saps away self-esteem for me.
Ben, you know you can just tell people that you hadn't played it, right?
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
Okay. No, Pokemon Stadium, that one's kind of weird because I remember getting it and playing it just because I wanted to see Pokemon in 3D and there weren't a lot of opportunities to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, what other opportunities were there?
Pokemon Snap.
Pokemon
dude.
Snap is so good. It's such a good game.
That was a good game.
Yeah. Stay tuned, fellas. Yeah, but so yeah, no, that is a long list of a lot of very good games.
Yeah, like I said, how do you play anything new? So that's a full roster.
It's easy if you try. Not playing anything new. David, what does Robert say?
Robert Noakes says, now Castlevania Symphony of the Night. I play it through once or twice a year growing up. Oh, growing up, I didn't have much money or games during the SNES days. I constantly cycled through Super Metroid / Legend of Zelda.
Link to the Past.
Yes. Link to the Past and Super Mario World.
Right, that's the Trinity right there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like a theme here, though, is that Metroidvania games are just infinitely replayable.
Yeah, they definitely seem to be getting a lot of play. However, it's both of the same one. It's the same one that they're talking
about. I forget, was Symphony of the Night the first one with the albino pretty boy guy?
With Alucard? No, I believe he was playable before, but
okay.
It was the first one where he was an albino pretty boy.
Okay. Yeah. That one was very good.
Yeah. A lot of classics on here. I mean, you see, it makes sense that you're going to go back and replay them.
Right. Should we be doing ours actually?
Yeah, we can take a break to do ours. I'll just do mine real quick. It's not going to surprise anybody. I go back and I replay survival horror games a lot. So Silent Hill. I was on a pretty good cycle there where I was replaying the entire Silent Hill series every year. That kind of fell off.
Have you ever considered there might be a reason why you have trouble sleeping?
I like those games a lot. I like those. I'll also do Resident Evil from time to time. You know, Chrono Cross is one that I dip back into. Like, all of these are games I like found at a specific time in my life, right? So,
Are we just going in sequence?
Yeah,
yes?
let's do one more of ours, and then we can do another one of theirs.
Sure. I really don't tend to do much in terms of going back and playing. I mean, generally speaking, once I play it, I've kind of, you know, sucked the nectar from it, and I need to go vampire something else.
What about World of Warcraft?
Although that, I would say that probably the two exceptions. A lot of the Game Boy games, I think partially just from the nature of them being portable, I played it a lot, and, you know, Pokemon's obviously kind of made for that. And then the other one is, yeah, MMOs, to a certain degree, I guess that's kind of the point of an MMO, but I do go back to World of Warcraft every so often after I swear it off each time. A lot of that's, having a guild that, you know, both my martial arts instructors play World of Warcraft real heavily, and about once every other month I go up there for a seminar, and so I tend to go up there, get convinced to play it, and then eventually give up, sometime after about a month, and it's kind of a reoccurring cycle.
Yeah, they just send you back with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So let's do one. I'll read this one. That's cool. Christopher Schley. Again, another fairly long one, which is perfectly cool. Please do not be upset if we abridge your thing here. He says the Baldur's Gate series. Those 2.5 games keep calling me back. I don't think high fantasy has ever been done in such an awesomely nonlinear and goddamn it epic way. Everything is spot on. The dialogue, character development, and quests ranging from simple FedExing shit to world-changing events. So he goes on and says, it's just really high quality. And that nonlinear thing really contributes to that as well.
Wait, is Lord of the G-Strings actually a thing?
I think that he is fabricating that, although I can't be sure. Yeah, he also cites the inter-party dialogue as
Google
that.
That
happens. Yeah, just
careful.
he mentions Arcanum. It's pretty much in the same kind of realm. It's Infinity Engine-esque, kind of in the same same breath as Fallout and Planescape Torment. It's kind of the forgotten Infinity Engine game. And then he finally says, really quick, Sam and Max Hit the Road. I've pretty much played that game probably once a year since it came out. One of the funniest adventure games I've ever played. I like the Telltale games a lot, but nothing quite compares to that LucasArts masterpiece. Even if I can basically solve the game in my mind, it's still worth playing for me based on the writing. Yeah, that's how I am with a lot of adventure games. Like I neglected to say that, but like I do that with Myst a lot. Like I've gone back through and played the first four Myst games, like replayed them several times, for mostly that same reason.
Yeah. It's like walking through a house that you used to live in.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, exactly. So how about you, Ben? What do you find yourself, going back to over and over again?
So I had a hard time with this question. Because I don't think I really regularly replay things. I'll usually, if I like a game, I will replay it. But usually it's kind of like, I'll play it the first time, I'll wait a couple months, and I'll play it again, you know, a few times, depending on what kind of game it is.
Right.
I'd say the most notable exceptions of times that I've played it a really long time after it was released was Shadow of the Colossus series with you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think the last time we played it was maybe like, what, 2 years ago, maybe?
Just about, yeah.
So, that was a fair time after it was released. Also, Resident Evil 4, I know I played a lot of times.
Say your play count on Resident Evil 4 is much higher than the mean.
Yeah, probably. Because there were a couple times where I would try and beat that game in a day and came close, if not succeeded. So,
given that it's a 27-hour game.
Yeah, it's, well, you know. Once you get the
He's tricks not
out.
Bound by time.
No.
Yeah, I was going half the speed of light when I was playing it. Anyway, but I think those are probably some. Knights of the Old Republic was another one too, where I would play that, years after it was released, and played that also a few number of times. Mm-hmm.
I didn't think you liked that game.
Yeah, I guess not a lot of surprise picks from me or Cole, perhaps. I think those are the only games that I've played long after their release date.
Yeah. How about you, Dennis?
For me, it is the Jak and Daxter series.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite series of all time. And there's just, especially that first one, there's something pure about it that's just really nice to go back to. So not to wax poetic about a simpler time. But man, that game is just, for me, the essence of what a good platformer is, a good 3D platformer is. And so I can go back to that repeatedly. The other game is, and this is the game, I hope I don't jinx myself here, but I was trying to talk about it when I turned into a robot last time.
Okay.
But Endgame.
Oh, like, yeah.
And Ninja
plus.
2D jumpy thing.
Yeah.
It just, it feels so good. That sounds weird.
It's also a Chuck Mangione song.
It is, for me, in my mind, the Mario jump of action platformers.
Okay.
If that makes any sense, like just the controls feel so right that it is the standard by which I've come to judge everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so every once in a long while, I'll just be like, man, that was a fun game, and go back into it. And it's like a free download on whatever computer you're on, so it's super easy to get back into.
Yeah, it just runs in Flash.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are the two.
Cool. And then finally, let's say here, Dennis Reed Jeffries.
Oh, this one is short and sweet and to the point, and I love it. Peggle.
Yeah, Geolaw laying down some Peggle knowledge.
That's right. That's, oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a special kind of addiction.
Yeah, that's a game you can't escape.
It's implied, you know, coming back to a game implies that you have to stop playing it for some period
exactly.
of time first.
That's like me talking about, like, man, I really can't, you know, I really just dip back into Drop 7 a lot. I'm, like, never not playing Drop 7. I always have a game going. Like, yeah. I remember Peggle came out for iOS the summer that I was living in New York, and I have very fond memories of riding the queue line, listening to podcasts and playing Peggle on my iPod Touch. It was a fun time.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Neat. So, thank you so much, everybody, for participating. Watch the Twitter, that's at DuckFeedTV, or follow us on the Facebook group, which is facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast for those. Those generally go up on Tuesdays. I'm trying to get better about putting them out earlier on Tuesdays, but we have no dearth of responses because our fans are awesome and engaged, and we love every one of you. Thank you.
You guys are freaking sweet.
Yeah.
The end boss.
So it's time for the end boss, where we leave you with something to chew on for the rest of the week. Does anybody want to go?
Yeah.
Go.
Beer is my end boss. I'm going to a beer festival this weekend on Saturday. So
oh, neat.
I'm excited about that.
What's the name of the event, or do you not want to give away your whereabouts?
I'll give away my whereabouts. It's like the Great Las Vegas Beer Festival or whatever. I think it's like the third year that they've held it. But
imagine it'll be a lot of Fat Tire.
Maybe. I think that's a Colorado one. Maybe. I haven't seen it. Yeah. On the list at least.
Right.
They have maybe like 6 to 10 breweries in Vegas, which I didn't know they had that many. But oh, wow. Or at least I maybe they're local, so maybe they might be out of the greater Las Vegas area, which is the Mojave Desert. But yeah, yeah. So yeah, it should be good. There's some stouts there, so I'm excited about that.
Awesome. Well, report back.
I will.
Yep. I'll do one. You know, it's not from life, but it's just kind of a cool story that I didn't feel like it was brief worthy, especially with Nintendo, the Nintendo thing happening. I don't play League of Legends. I'm aware of it. I know like what they're doing over there. But there's an awesome story about a disabled guy, a disabled gamer, who doesn't have use of his hands. So he has to play the game basically with he has a mouse that works on his cheek. He hits the keyboard with a pen in his mouth. And he has foot pedals for stuff. He did something that very few people are able to do in the game, which is get a pentakill, because most games are 5v5. Like, that means taking out all five of your opponents in almost one go.
Nice.
Yeah. So this is a person who doesn't have any use of, you know, his lower body to a certain extent, especially not his arms, who just like straight up done did this thing. And kind of any time there's one of these disabled gamer stories or stuff being accessible or these kind of triumphs, I always like commenting on those because that is fucking awesome.
That's awesome.
He had a chance to do that, and there's all these people just kind of like really being supportive of it.
Yeah, I think isn't League of Legends right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. There's a couple of them I can never remember. Isn't that one of them that like records, you know, every game and you can pull it up? I wonder if you could pull up the actual.
Yeah. I'm sure that it is. I mean, I know that there are like that they're pretty much running that stuff all the time. There are like places where you can go. And I'm sure that this was actually captured on Twitch too. There's a video on the Polygon article, that kind of shows this happening. It kind of shows what he's doing with his face and mouth, what he's doing with his feet. So
nice.
Yep. So good on you. Mr. Character name. Yep. Who wants to go next?
I've got one.
Okay.
This is about a reunion that has been, gosh, probably 15 years in the making. I went through my Star Wars phase, like I'm sure every child in America did, and rented some random Star Wars flight sim from the library that I played and absolutely loved. And it wasn't an X-Wing game. And
was it a TIE Fighter game?
It was not a TIE Fighter game.
Was it X-Wing versus TIE Fighter?
We're running out of options here. But no, like it had like a really in-depth story, and it was way more simmy, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, than your typical like arcade fighter game. Like one of the missions was like working for the family business and going out and rearranging cargo in your space fields.
Yeah. Was and it X-Wing Alliance?
Yeah, I was going to say, are you sure it was an X-Wing game?
Yeah, X-Wing Alliance.
I don't, well, sorry, if I think about a traditional X-Wing game, they're very, very arcadey.
No, like those were, like X-Wing was pretty semi too. Like,
really? It came with a joystick.
Yeah, it was best played with a joystick, and there was a lot of like shield management and power system management.
Yeah, and that's what I remembered about the game. And that in the story, and I remember that you fought Boba Fett in the Slave 2 at one point. Mm-hmm. Although I'm pretty sure that happens in most Star Wars fighting games.
Well, yeah.
That's just so awesome.
Such as Masters of Terra Kasai.
I'm sorry, what?
You said Star Wars fighting games, and there actually was a Star Wars fighting game called Masters of Terra Kasai.
No, what, like a legit fighting game?
Yeah, it was awful. It was the worst.
It was awful. Despite being heavily drawing on the greatest martial art ever made. But sorry.
No, but anyway, so it's just like for 15 years, I've tried to remember the name of that game and never been motivated enough to seriously try to figure it out. And finally, was bothering me this weekend, and I just posted on Yahoo Answers. And say what you will about Yahoo Answers, but they get you answers on random knowledge stuff really quickly. So I'm in the process of trying to figure out if that is available, and may relive my days playing that game, and we'll see how it holds up.
See, I've wanted to do TIE Fighter for Watch Out for Fireballs for a very, very long time.
Oh, yeah?
But like, there's no place to get those things.
Oh. That's sad.
No place legally.
No place legally, but I like to fucking buy shit. If I'm going to, I don't know. Let me give you my money. I have $15 to give you for just like even the barest port of TIE Fighter. Put it up on GOG, put it up on Steam. I don't care. Also this too. I mean, this is one that I always wanted to play, but never had a chance to, Dennis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's good. Well, 10-year-old me thought it was good. So
it is really good. It is good. So right.
So, yeah, that's my end boss.
How about you, David?
I've got actually a completely trivial one. After my angst with Dead Island, I was thinking about just other storylines in other random games, and something hit me that I guess had never occurred to me at the time. In Resident Evil 4, how the heck do they capture the president's daughter? Like, is that ever explained?
They use Las Plagas on one of the security guards. I don't know.
I mean, that just makes very little sense.
Maybe it was like Taken, where she wanted to go follow U2 throughout Europe. And they just got her when she got to the airport.
Yeah.
All right.
Girls love you too.
So I've heard. Yeah, I don't know. I have no answer for that. I'm sure it's in a wiki somewhere. So
I don't know. That's just been bothering me all week. So
that was the 20th level. 20, you guys. A whole Woo-hoo. 20.
The big 2-0.
The big 2-0.
Next week we can drink.
Wait, what?
You're underage, David.
Yes, we all are. We're all underage here. No. Okay, so in 2004, Ashley was kidnapped by Jack Krauser, a mercenary working for Osmund Sadler of Los Illuminados, while coming back home from her college in Massachusetts. She is taken to a remote village in Spain, where she is apparently held ransom by Los Illuminados. Okay. Makes sense.
That still seems semi.
He did some really implausible stuff. I think that kidnapping actually is one of the most implausible thing. No, it's fine. I'm just... I didn't want to leave that unresolved. So anyway, I just gonna leave that there for you, because I would drive our audience mad, and they would have no idea how to do the things that we're gonna tell them to do, which is leave us a rating or review on iTunes. You can subscribe to us there. That really helps. Tell a friend, please. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. I know I promised t-shirts. Those are going to be up soon. We're still working out like a distribution kind of thing. I don't want them to be too terribly expensive, but just the way that these things work out, it's going to be a little bit more than you're used to paying for a shirt. So I apologize for that sincerely. It's just one of those weird things. I would like to have that out there as an option, but I would understand if you balk at the price that's going to be up there. If you'd like to support the network financially, you can go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar, buy whatever you're going to buy on Amazon. We get a little kickback from that, and that helps cover things like the blog hosting, hosting the bandwidth for the show. It covers pretty much most of the expenses for the network, for which we are incredibly grateful. Mm-hmm. Is there anything I'm missing, fellas?
I think that about does it. Cool. We'd love to see some iTunes reviews. That
yes,
makes
yes. It's been a minute since we've had them. I check them obsessively. it'd be very nice to see that thing if you do that. So for Twitter sign-offs, my name's Cole Ross. That's at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Dennis Furia at D Furia.
I'm David Moneysmith at MoneySmith777.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
Cool. And don't get spit blunk.
You just got spit blunked.
Spit blunked. My name's Colt. Don't burp. Don't burp when I'm about to do a thing.
Sorry, dude.
That's fine.
Do a thing.